This was actually like a jubileum for me because it was my 10th summit protest, and I was again, first was in 94 against the World Bank, and the last one were in Heiligendamm, and it was 10 years ago, so it's interesting to see what have changed. So I mostly came here to see what's happening with the moment, how the discussion around strategy, how the discussion in general has changed. And also to see, it's interesting with G20, that it's a kind of new sovereignty taking form there that we haven't seen before.
The G20, you mean?
Yeah, the G20. And with a right-wing populist surge in Europe and US, and we also with Erdogan and Putin in power, and Saudi Arabia sitting with the same table, it's like a summit without any democratic legitimacy, and but also involving more countries than the G8 meetings. But you got the BRICS countries now inside this kind of summit, so it's it's interesting to see these changes also, and to come here and hear what the analysis about it is.
Yeah, you mentioned the strategies, ideas, new ideas of the movements. What did you hear? What did you see? What were the most interesting new ideas you heard?
Yeah, I think this is not the most innovative parts when it comes to action strategies or even analysis of capitalism at the in 2001, under the globalization protest, it felt like it opened up new spaces, invented new methods, and also came out with new theories like Tony Negri's and Michael Hart's theories about empire and how a global sovereignty was taking shape. But for one example, then it was quite important with the social forums, but having their own agenda, that the social movements should have their own agenda, was as important as disturbing the summit. But now it's only disturbing the summit. It's not so much in talking about our own agenda, and that's one difference I see. And the other one is that the German movement has been experimenting for a long time with a sort of mass disobedience. They got inspired from the Italians under the globalization movement, but they combined it with anti-nuclear waste transports and with anti-fascist protests, and they have been using it on the Friday day of actions for blocking the delegates, but also blocking the harbors. And, that was interesting to see. Also because the organization I'm part of, Alto Talla, Everything for Everybody, we're part of this network of, it's called the Transnational Social Strike Platform. And the social disobedience and the social strike is a part of the same discussion about how you should spread conflicts outside the activist scene and socialize the conflicts, making more people involved with them, not becoming the representatives or the experts on the conflict, or just the most militant groups who are taking the fight by themselves. So the social strike action of closing down the border, it comes out of that discussion of on how to shut down capitalist logistics and see logistics as a central part of a capitalist production globally. And that's a new thing we haven't seen on the former summit protests, for example. And the mass disobedience were taking place at the same time, and they were more using this trying to be uncontrollable but also train as many people as possible in participating in a confrontative non-violence. And we have tried that for 10 years now, but I was surprised that it still worked quite well, but the police haven't yet managed to take control over such situations.
What are our goals here in these days, and what are our tools, and how have we succeeded?
Yeah, that's maybe the problem, but I don't see that it was so many goals, but it was not any really central demands or central analysis, central theory on what's going on. But that's actually because also I think the changes are really taking place right now with Trump and with Brexit and with the right-wing populist surge. But I think the most common goal was just trying to disturb the summit as much as possible. But they put the summit so close to the put it inside the São Paulo area, and so close to the area, traditional left-wing area here. But then the demands, for example, in the demonstration were quite abstract, were more anti-capitalistic slogans, but hasn't changed too much over the time. I tried to read the different pamphlets and magazines that they have been handing out. The new topic that everyone is bringing out is logistics, and the other one is social reproduction, but they were trying to use this protests to see if they not could actually just disturb the summit but also disturb the capitalist production by disturbing the circulation, disturbing the logistics by blocking the harbor. That's one thing. And the other one is the issues on social reproduction is connecting it to the wave of struggles that have been taking in Poland and in Latin America, in Brazil, or in that have been taking place against the violence against women. Have been like one part of this global reactionary turn, but the women's body has become like a battlefield again, a battle over the social reproduction. But they try to attack abortion rights, attack women's possibility to mow safe in the streets, and attack feminist organizing. And that's our like two issues that are quite new for this kind of summit protest, even if the struggles have been going on for a long time.
And what about the G20 forum? How do you see their goals, even though they might seem very, very, very clear already? Can you think aloud about the goals of the G20 forum?
When it comes to this global institutions like the World Bank and IMF or G8, the G20 is quite new. They started as a response to the financial crisis and also the crisis for the free trade agreements in the end of the 90s and early 20s, and also got new importance after the economic crisis in 2008. And I also think that they needed to involve the BRICS countries, and they needed to find a way to get more economies than just the G8, the military strong powers behind it. And this summit, I think they are really like testing each other's feeling on each other, but it's, they don't know with Trump's rhetoric if he's gonna try to be closing or ending some free trades agreement, or if it's gonna go back to protectionism. And so I'm not really sure we know the outcome of this summit yet. I think they have quite an open agenda as to finding a new common ground for them to because they can't solve the next economic crisis like they did with the last one in 2008, when China took a lot of the roles and with their loans and their production. And so they need some kind of global sovereign space, and that means that the G20 has become the new, not the free trade agreements or the World Trade Organization or the World Bank or so.
So do you see that the meaning of the G20 forum and forums like that might increase in the future, or that is the form of the for the elites to gather and govern the world?
Yeah, I think it's the forum right now for them that's the best forum to use, and that the other forums that we have been protesting against, like G8, is losing meaning.
And so are the old institutions like nation state and the like.
Yeah, I think what they are trying to, when we were protesting against the free trades agreements, one of our basic demands were like a Tobin tax, that they should tax the financial flows and speculations. But after the 2008 crisis, that's like a common strategy now, that they know that they need to have some kind of protection of their markets and also strengthen the national states in a way. So I think this is like, it's not gonna be the nation state versus the G20. It's more that they're trying to find a way of combining global sovereignty, global market, with some kind of safety net, national protections, for some kind of protections for the banks, for the, because the system is getting more and more vulnerable, so it's, they can't really work on their own, but at the same time strengthening the national states is one way that they're trying to deal with the crisis.
And how do you see the actions of police during these days? We have been here today. I saw one, how do you call that in English, placard where was written that a citation of a person. I also can't remember the name, but anyways, the point was that these protests and these days have been also a possibility for the police to get to know to new ways of controlling people, and it was a sort of a laboratorium for new ways for the police to act. Do you think that how that that this the laboratorium idea really is true, and how do you see the actions of the police in general?
Yeah, I think in 2001 under the globalization protests we saw quite a violent reaction from the police, and the response to that was that they were trying to develop new methods or more mobile units, and but also other de-escalation strategies, anti-conflict teams, dialogue. And now we don't see anything of that left, of a dialogue, of anti-conflict, and the de-escalation strategy is just an empty slogan. But what we have seen instead, in if you compare to the Blockupy in Frankfurt, when we had were trying to blockade the European Central Bank, their new tower that they were building at that time, I think it was 2013 maybe. Then they tried to arrest as many people as possible before the actions. But when you gathered a lot of people at the university or came in buses, they took everyone and put in cages and hold them, so it was not possible to do actions. But here they have not arrested so many people. They have let people go all the time. It seems more that their purpose is to scare, to dissolve gatherings, to drive into the, run into with police in masses and try to make them disperse, run in different directions, and then they use the water cannons, and then they use their vehicles just to hunt people and get them to run in different directions and to break up all forms of blocks and crowds and manifestations. So without arresting and arresting people, and I really can't really understand this kind of strategy, because if they want less riots, it's not a very tactical or useful strategy, because when people start to running and run away in smaller groups, that's when they start to break things, build barricades, the riots start. So in getting people to dissolve manifestations, they have been creating more and more riots than any of the summit protests I have been to before, without containing them, without arresting them, without... I think it's very strange and confusing strategy. But for me it felt also, even if the strategy was to scare people or make them feel not so secure, for me it had the opposite effect, but I felt more secure because I know, okay, they're not arresting me, they are just trying to hunt me away a block and then they let me go there. And so it was more like a cat and the mouse game than it was actually you were feeling unsafe. But then also it seems like they totally lost control over the situation Friday evening, so they had to send in the military units, special units.
I was very surprised Thursday when the first big demonstration started here at the harbour, at the fish market place, and the demonstration couldn't go further than a few hundred meters, and it seemed like that, like before in Frankfurt, the police had already decided before that this demonstration is not going to go through the city. But was behaving very, very aggressively, and that I was very surprised, and still I'm surprised of that way of action. Do you have any answer for the question why did the police act so aggressively?
Yeah. I think they decided that their top priority was to stop demonstrations, having this no demonstration zone and trying to get demonstrations which were closing into that zone to dissolve them. So that's why they cracked down so hard on demonstrations, but they were not so interested in calming riots. But the demonstration were the, and that's why, that's the thing, the demonstration Welcome to Hell, what was trying to be a huge black bloc, but a black bloc in a manifestation, it's not really, it's more of a symbolic thing than actually effective, because if you go so many people together that are dressed in black with black masks, it's more visual. It's not that you it's just clothes. It's not that people have weapons. It's not that people can do anything to protect themselves if the police comes with pepper sprays or with water cannons. The only thing they can do is run away. So I don't understand why they thought that this black bloc was such a problem. The black bloc only became a problem when the bloc actually dissolved and it was small bands of masked people who could run out in the street, make barricades, start fires. At that point it became a problem. Not inside if it's 4,000 people dressed in black going in front of a demonstration, because they can't do anything there.
No negotiation, but spreading fear. That seemed to be like the idea of the actions of the police.
Yeah, and dissolving crowds, dissolving manifestations. But that's really a strange strategy for them.
Was it then that they wanted to show that you don't play game with us, that we are the total authority here and so forth?
Yeah, but it totally blew back in their faces, because instead they got a lot of small riots taking place mobile all over the city, all over the São Paulo area, and around Rota Flora and Shansen in the evenings. It was the police totally lost control. They couldn't go into these small streets with water cannons, and then they ran out of water, couldn't really back out, and it was, I never seen them lose control in such a way. Maybe that's why they, in a desperate way to get back the control, tried to send in the special units, because it was really strange.
What is the story with the special units? I think I haven't heard about that before.
No, around midnight on Friday, after people had been rioting for 3-4 hours in São Paulo and in Shansen, they decided that. They sent in this Sondereinsatzkommando and also a special riot squad from the police, these two units, and they had automatic weapons who walked in these areas, and they were like, had to they were escalating the conflict, but also taking in the most heaviest guns they had, and
but they didn't use these guns.
No. It was more in patrolling the streets and sending in, but they were. It was a lot of rumor that they stormed Rota Flora, but it came out from the legal team, but it was not true, but they hadn't got into Rota Flora, but they seemed to have been looking with their automatic weapons with the laser pointers at people inside Rota Flora, so people who looked out, they could see there's pictures of them with like red dots in their faces that they were, so it was a a strategy of scaring and really showing strength when they lost control.
And what about rioting and the Black Bloc? How do you see the motives and the goals of these?
Yeah, as I said, that it's been not all autonomous initiatives has been about rioting, but it's been three initiatives. One was confrontative nonviolence to block the delegates, but succeeded in a way because the meeting was delayed for some time because the delegates couldn't get in. The other one was blocking the harbor, and the third one was doing this huge Black Bloc manifestations. But I don't know what their goal was, what they had planned to do with the manifestation. They had really applied for a really long demonstration route, but they only managed to go 500 meters. After that, I think it's not like a common decided purpose, but the meaning of these Black Bloc riots is to make the police feel that they can't guarantee the control, the safety, and if they don't cancel the meeting, at least they should be feel that they can't drive around delegates as they want in the city and have to tighten the grip and just keep them closed in the summit area, in the mass.
So a certain amount of conflict might be inevitable in demonstrations like these.
Yeah. And normally I don't think there should have been so much conflict or so much violence if the police hadn't used this strange tactics of breaking up manifestations. That was creating the situation. But it's also that the mass, the meeting, the summit is being held inside this left-wing area. It's really just two blocks away from Roteflora. So you can't really understand why they put the meeting so close to this area. This should be the worst place to hold a summit.
What do you think about the actions of the mainstream media, which is concentrating to the violence of the protesters and not concentrating to the violence of the police, or of course not too much concentrating on the violence of global capitalism? How do you see the behavior of the mainstream journalists and the mainstream media?
Yeah. When it comes to the mainstream media, I think they are always writing about violence. But when it comes to summit protests, they always say that the violence are hiding the politics or making the politics not visible. But when it's not violence, nobody talks about the politics either. So it's not that they would have talked about the criticism of G20 if there hadn't been riots. But also when I spoke to German friends, they said that it was quite reasonable articles in German press that actually before the first day or the Thursday they wrote that it was the police who started the riots and criticized the police strategy. But what I've seen of Swedish media, it's only anti-protesters, anti-demonstrations, that they only talk about how left-wing vandals destroyed the city. But they also don't have really inside view from here. But also I think that a new phenomenon this time is In 2001, in the globalization protest, it was we who organized all alternative media structures, like it was the independent media centers. And there was a will not just to create communication platforms for activists, for the actions, but also to communicate outward why we are doing this. Now they got a lot of good structure for if you're an activist and want to know what's going on, where to get legal support, where the police are, but they don't have so much channels outward. They are not like trying to describe or present why we are protesting. But what you could see around the demonstration was more the right-wing alternative media or the independent media to the right that were there just to show how violent the left wing were, and they were there just to communicate it outwards to their sympathizers, their viewers. And that was not organized from upwards. It was more of solo journalists going around where they're having a video channel on YouTube, going there next to the black blocks, trying to get as much riot porn pictures as possible. Or you had Russia Today, Rapli, going there, streaming all the riots. So it was... you had that kind of media structure that we... using all our actions, but having another goal in showing them than we had before. It's not mainstream media.
So there's something maybe we should concentrate on the media issue, how to build like indie media sort of platforms or like autonomous media better than it is at this moment.
Yeah, I think the left wing has always, or the radical left, considered these kind of tools are organizing tool mostly, that they use their media platforms to organize. But the right wing, they use it for information warfare. They're weaponizing the information and try to use it in another way that we haven't countered or tried to combat in a way, or creating our own channels, our own projects that work in the same way or a better way. We don't need to maybe create this fake news or just reshape stories, but we still don't have any that kind of structures that are want to change the opinion in society around it, public opinion, taking like a cultural hegemonic struggle on what we are doing.
Do you see much hope in the mainstream media? Or a question, for example, for me, or has been, or at least in the history sometimes relevant, the question that is it possible to be active in that framework? Is it possible to try to bring progressive emancipatory perspectives and writings and journalistic stuff inside the framework of the mainstream media, inside the framework of the bourgeois media?
Yeah, I think it's possible, but I also think one of the big mistakes with the globalization moment was it, but it's using this methods of tactical media, what we tried to occupy the media and making it a platform for our news, or instead of just building our own mass channels. So, and also if you see, it was a lot of left-wing media here at the manifestation handing out the papers, and it's very good journalism, very good in investigative journalism, but it's read mostly from, you need to be a left-wing to read these left-wing magazines. It's not like using YouTube, using the net, using Facebook, more using the feeds to to get articles that are being mass spread. They didn't work in that way.
One question more about mass demonstrations. How do you see the current state of them, the current state of mass demonstrations? What, in your opinion, can we achieve here that we cannot achieve elsewhere, and how much should we concentrate in the future for this kind of gatherings and this kind of protests?
No, I think the mass demonstrations are very important, because what we have been doing is more and more decentralized actions, but we need to feel the strength of working together, being collectively together, and also that we are part of the same moment, we are belonging together. And I think it's important that Die Linke and German Attack and the climate movement and the radical anti-capitalist autonomists are going in the same march, participating in the same events, and not just being that there are 10, 50 parallel initiatives that are never meeting or never having any connections. So I think the mass manifestation was this only connecting thing under this summit protest. Now that we don't have the social forums anymore, or a big convergence centers, or big alternative summits.
And what, in your opinion, is the, or are the most central themes or questions or challenges for the progressive movements of nowadays?
I'm not really sure, because also I think that we are standing in front of a new situation. I think what is going to take place in most of the countries is that we're going to see a new center, that the neoliberals and the social democrats are ruling together, coming together, and you got an extreme populist right that also are the one who has been reacting to the economic crisis, that have become a mass movement or a mass political power. And I think the big project for the left is shaping something that are now an alternative, or being a force from the left, and not just counting with the social democrats anymore, seeing that they see themselves as the center against the extremes. And they talk about populism, but left-wing, right-wing populism is the same problem for them. They are trying to strengthen the center, and I don't think the traditional left-wing, right-wing bloc politics works for us anymore. If we now have a social democrats bonding up with the left or the right, so we have to build. Look at them, for example, the left-wing populism can take several directions. I don't think that the national left-wing populist movement is so interesting, but that's one kind of left-wing populism that are growing. The other kind of left-wing populism that are growing, that I think is the interesting one, is the one we're trying to build from the municipalities, build from the local cities, and creating networks. And I would like to have seen more of that kind of platforms also taking place here, but the social movements and these rebel cities coming together and forming like a new left-wing force.
And what do you think have have we maybe learned during these days, according progressive politics, also in general, and on the other hand, when we prepare for the next big demonstration?
Now, what we have learned, I don't think we have learned so much. I think we just opened up a lot of new work that we need to done, and the new lessons and the new studies that we need to done. And I also think that Germany is not in the forefront of this discussion, but it's really in the rear, or but we have to look more to Spain or different parts of, like, Napoli, for to learn more from what's taking place there. But a good experience was the social strike action in closing down the harbor, but it's possible to do. That was a good lesson to bring home. And also that these kind of trained confrontative nonviolence, mass disobedience, is still possible to do. And what I think will be interesting if we manage to connect this thing, the local municipal struggles, the struggles on housing, on living conditions, if we connect them to the struggles from taking place on workplaces, but not staying in the workplaces, not letting the unions monopolize them, but connect them to the social disobedience practices. So you use social disobedience and you use the social moments taking part in using the strike as a method, as on the 8th of March, the International Women's Strike, but it was the feminist movement that came up with a call for a strike inside the production, inside the social reproduction, and also the migrant strikes, that the migrants are calling for a strike. It's, I think this hybrid combined forms are the interesting ones. And you could take some parts of a lesson from this summit, but most of these lessons are maybe taking place in other days, other countries.
And what is your general impression now after these protests? The world we are going back to, is the direction progressive or not? Just a general feeling. In other words, are you hopeful about the near future?
No, I'm not really hopeful, but the hopeful thing is that it's an open situation, so it's nobody really knows where it's to go. But the liberals, neoliberals and the social democrats are trying to create a new center. They don't know if it's going to work. And the right-wing populist parties, they don't have an answer on the economic problems, economic crisis. So they also don't have the answers. So it's an open situation where nobody has really the big plan laid out or a strategy clear for them. That's the positive side. But the negative side is that I don't see either of this view, the right-wing populism or the new center, as an, I both see them as a threat. And I also see that the left-wing could respond in a way that I don't think is really interesting, but it becomes more of a trying to create a welfare in a closed nation. So it means that they start to speak about welfare for our people, welfare for our own, and are closing the borders or are not so much interested in international solidarity or understanding that the, how the, we're living in a global factory now, with a global working class, and a lot of people are not employed now in this capitalism and are on their mow and migrating, and there's, we have really seen just beginning of migration flows, and I don't think they have the answers on that. They are a reaction, or they are responsible for it, but it's not, they don't have a solution.
And one more last little question. Thank you for lasting with this long interview. The last one is, what greetings would you like to send for the revolutionaries of our time?
What greetings I would send to revolutionaries of our time? No, I think the thing I want to say to the greeting is that solidarity is more important than ever, and when we're weak, it has a huge importance, but we can't leave any conflict to that special subject, that special branch, that special workplace, that special, but we always need to try to socialize the conflict, get involved, even if it's not our conflict. We need to be there creating connections, and that's what I think we all as radicals need to do right now. Be really solidaric to every initiative that's taking place and spreading it, circulating it, socializing it, making it go outside of its boundaries. Siamo tutti antifascisti! Siamo tutti antifascisti! Siamo tutti antifascisti! Siamo tutti antifascisti!